Welcome to Your Brain On by Salience Learning. I'm Karen Foster.
And I'm Krista Gerhard. In this series of Your Brain On, Iris Hill, Vice President at Salience Learning, takes a behind-the-scenes peek of the recently earned Brandon Hall Gold Award for Best Use of Blended Learning. This award acknowledges the great partnership efforts of Connecting Salience Learning's role-specific evidence-based learning design with Eurekos' technology advancements to create an award-winning process for impactful learning. This is the final installment of our three-part series.
We know a lot of our companies work with a lot of different vendors. If you were a new designer and now you're working with vendors, what key questions would you have our listeners actually ask their vendors that they're working with to really get the best when it comes to measurement?
You have to ask yourself a few key questions first, I would argue. I think you have to ask yourself, what is impact, right? You need to get clear on the definition of that for yourself. Is impact just they completed 100%? Is impact the fact that they showed up a few times as you asked them to? I think most of us know the answer is no to that. But you do need to go beyond that and think impact is that we see them doing. Well, how are we going to know they're doing? Or how do we get them to doing? So what part of the in-between story do we also need to tell in terms of practicing confidence building, intention, and motivation to apply and use? Once you understand what your definition of impact is and you have an idea of what you want to measure, then I think that's when you go to your vendors and ask them, you know, do you have the capability to do this? Or, you know, are you supporting these standards so that I can get this kind of information from the system? How do you support what we know about social learning in an asynchronous way? You know, social learning is very broad, but in this case, we're talking asynchronous in a digital format versus other mechanisms of pulling social learning through. The kinds of questions I ask are like, well, how do we adapt for different audiences? What mechanisms are available? So that if I have a scenario for this situation and this audience, but I want to replace it with a scenario for this situation and this audience, like how might that work in your system? So trying to contextualize the learning experience in a digital format that's manageable, like Nick said earlier, content management is also part of your strategy.
Yeah, I mean, the difficult part is exactly to measure behavioral change. And a behavioral change is not like an outcome that happens when you have clicked on page number 7, right? This is something that you need to measure in other ways and in combinations with other types of facilitation that you are doing through a blended learning program. And you need to think about, when do you have proof that the behavioral change has happened? And this is always unique. You know, this is something that you need to put your head around so that you will be able to figure out when I see evidence of this through some exercises, through asking people specific questions, or through other ways that does not necessarily register as a click in any piece of technology. Yeah, it's the outcomes of what it is that you actually went through that will prove this.
You know, I think one thing might be to give some examples of how you'd like to measure the outcomes of your programs and then see if they can accommodate that. Because it might be good, Amy, for you to share some of the measurements that you've done on some of these programs where you're measuring kind of the before and after and trying to get a handle on what the impact was there.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Nick, I love the point that Nick keeps making about blended learning, that, you know, there's stuff that goes on in the system, right? And you have a strategy for understanding what that is and what information you need to pull out there as evidence. Another really great word to be framing your thinking around. But then there's also things that you do outside the system that also need to be instrumented. And what I mean by that is you need to have a mechanism for collecting the information. So sometimes it's a survey, right? Other times, it involves a use of a technology outside the system to collect that information. Again, maybe a survey or some observation tool, recording tool, whatever. But for us, we saw the opportunity in leveraging XAPI and taking something as traditional as a self-evaluation around behavior and pre-posting it, right? And using the XAPI protocol on the back end to get the data in a format that will allow us to easily pull it out of a system. And so Eurekos was able to both support what we built there, both from a SCORM and be able to communicate to the Eurekos LMS, but then also the infrastructure of Eurekos included the learner record store that could then listen to and collect that data for us. So by having the learner just do everything in that space from a pre and post experience, we were also then able to collect that data and then compare it against other levers of data and evidence that we're pulling both outside of the learning experience and within the program itself. Simple example of what I mean by all of this. There's a simple question. It's like, to what degree have you been using this behavior? And we moved away from the traditional Likert scale approach because the Likert scale approach is conditioned in some ways, right? You always want to get a 5 or reach to a 4. And we moved to a drop-down statement approach. It's like, I do, but I do only in these cases. Or I don't because I feel like my job doesn't let me do that. And these are really insightful inputs and outputs that can lead to more questions and understanding about why people are, why they aren't, and to what degree they really are when you lean it up against some of the other data. So that's just an idea.
So I guess that's really driving to the behavior change, right? Are they doing it more on a regular basis? Are they not doing it at all? And I think from a client standpoint, I know that that's what our clients are asking for. Are we getting to that behavior change? Are we able to measure that?
Yeah, and we don't just rely on that. We then look at, well, these are some of the commitment plans that people shared. And, oh, they turned in evidence of here's something they tried, here's the results that they got. And we put that all together to tell the bigger story, because it is not unusual to also have people be really confident about their behaviors, learn a little bit more about what it actually means to do that, and then see that number go down a little bit. And I would argue, while that can be a little bit jarring at first, I would say, actually, it's probably good news because now they really understand what that behavior is and they're actually being honest and understanding that, hey, maybe I'm not doing that as much as I thought I was.
I think before we go to the measurement, I think that there's something that goes just before that. First of all, I think that the need for really comprehensive processes around adaptive learning is step number one. Because once you have this, which means that based on, for example, what Amy just gave us an example, you know, what if you answered not really, but yeah, in that drop down, then I would actually like, now I have like a million questions because this is teaching me something about, you know, so now I want to give you something else because you said that. So when we are talking about the measurement of also the outcomes of your content and, you know, which parts that they maybe choose or do not choose, then you want to extend that to being individual. So as part of driving that, you know, and making the thought process even further, for us, the adaptive learning part that can be configured by the learning designers and the high foreheads that is going to, you know, devise this, you know, with the critical thinking and everything that goes behind this and what outcomes would that mean for the company that I'm, or the organization I'm working for, you know, maybe taking it into a direction. You could discover this, you know, during the first couple of iterations. And then, you know, you just, wow, I'm seeing something that I didn't expect. So now I need to change my program. I don't have to wait till next time something is happening. You know, I need to do something right now for the next cohort, because I saw something that I didn't expect. So then you will be able to configure these and make this super personalized based on that. That would be the first step. The second step is then you know, once you have this, can you then measure what they did when you make those changes? If you give them options to choose from, will this give you an indication? And now we are getting into not the individual. So when you're saying, what is the trend is for me, from my perspective, it is meta level analytics, because I want the trend. I don't want John's outcome. Yeah, that's nice, you know, and I can, you know, as the instructor, I want John's outcome. But as the company, I want the meta level analytics. I want to know where this group of people, you know, where that trend goes. So if you're asking me what the trend is, then the trend is the trend itself. I want to be able to see the trends. This is actually what I'm looking for. And for that, you need to have a kind of a BI thought set. Yeah. And that thought set needs to be built into your system and your content authoring tool from the very beginning. Because coming back, if you don't know what you want to measure, and if you don't have any idea about this, then you can't measure it. You know, you already lost the game. But if you know that you want to go here, then you can start measuring the individual pieces that, you know, you have, and build meta layer analytics that will show across organizations, people, reactions, and you need to visualize those.
I should add AI and machine learning. It's really going to change a lot. You know, it's going to change how designers work. It's going to change how they produce content. It's going to change the speed in which they produce content. Hopefully, it's going to change the quality of the content too, in a positive way. But, it, you know, we still have to balance that with bringing all parts of the organization into the design of great content. Because, you know, there's a lot of people who are not like Amy, who are instructional designers, other types of designers who are kind of designing courses in a silo. And it ends up being really kind of stale, generic content. Not always, but usually it does. And so it's still going to take really that human being approach and humans talking to humans to actually produce this. But I'm still really excited about what AI is going to do to make our lives easier, hopefully, you know, in developing this content.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Nick, so much for sharing your perspective, giving us the opportunity to celebrate together and go after, you know, an award in learning. Appreciate you sharing your insights and your vast knowledge of the industry from your perspective.
Likewise, it's returned to you. So thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Brain On. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Krista Gerhard.
And I'm Karen Foster.
And we'll see you next time.